Good morning, everybody. Welcome to this beautiful Tuesday morning in East Tennessee. You know, I was driving to rehab. That's cardiac rehab. I better clarify that. I was driving to cardiac rehab yesterday and just looking at the beauty of East Tennessee. You know, I've got to make 36 trips up there for that, for me to be complete with this process. And I kind of wish that was more, because it's really creating some good habits in this old boy. Another thing I was thinking about, I was looking around, I was on my treadmill and just sweating a little bit, looking around at all those other people in there. And I'm thinking, you know, all these people are about my same age, except this one girl who is 31 years old. And all of them are working hard to try to live longer, as long as possible. And then I go outside and I run into a couple people on the trip that are doing all they can to shorten their lives because of their driving habits, and many people because of their living habits. I think everybody needs to maybe have a physical scare at some point in their life. You know, that's probably, I shouldn't say that, but, you know, it does change your perspective. And speaking of changing in perspectives, I'm going to explain one to you this morning that I had this weekend. I told you I was going to go to Atlanta, which I did, and go to the Porsche North American headquarters in Atlanta, which I did, and drive a brand new Porsche GT3 911. You know what a 911 is? That's the one that's real swoopy looking, has, you know, pointed front and pointed rear, engines in the back. Basically the same design car since the early 60s. Very recognizable. People look at it and they say, there's a Porsche. You know, that's how a lot of people say it. You know, it is a two-syllable word, right? It's Porsche. It's not Porsche. If you hear somebody say Porsche, then you know they don't know what they're talking about. So I'm not trying to be snooty or anything, but that's just the way it is. You know, I don't like it when, well, you can't mispronounce Ford, can you? I guess I've never heard anybody say Chevrolet before. You know, you would think Chevrolet, they would spell it L-A-Y, but that's those French for you. But anyway, I went to this experience down there. My brother went with me and two of my other friends, and we paid good money to get to drive these cars, and I really didn't know what to expect. You know, when I first arrived, the headquarters is very modern. It's a huge building, huge structure, right next to Hartsfield International Airport. Matter of fact, it's right beside the flight path of jets as they land there. That was kind of fun watching that as the as we waited for our professional drivers that were going to accompany us on our adventure. And I mean to tell you, it was an adventure. You know, I thought I was a pretty good driver. I still think, as far as just looking at normal people, I'm a good driver. I do drive a little fast. My wife reminds me of that frequently. You know, if I'm on a two-lane road and I can see up ahead and there's a curve like between me and the distance, then I'll cut the curve. A lot of people just stay in their lane all the time. I'm not that guy. I don't stay in the lane all the time. But I am very careful. I'm not going to cut the curve if I think that there's going to be a car coming or I can't see. But, you know, I think I felt like when I got on this track that I was going to be proficient. And I was fairly proficient. I think, let's talk about scale. 0 to 10. Let's say 10 is Max Verstappen. You probably don't know who he is, but he's the points leader right now with Formula One racing. So he's about the epitome of car racing. And 0, well, I could say that a lot of people's names who I think are zeros when it comes to drivers, but I'm not gonna. So I would have put myself at about a 6 level, because I understand that professional race car drivers are way better than me. After going through this Porsche driving experience, I'm going to adjust that down to about a 3.5, because I saw what a real professional driver can do, and it's nothing I can do. Now, I'm older. You know, my reaction time is not what it used to be, I'm sure. But let me just explain to you what's down there at this place. So anyway, I get to drive on a 1.5 mile road course, get up to speeds 110, 120 if you're really pushing it. You got sweeping turns, S curves, a lot of elevation changes. You got blind curves. Of course, there's no cars coming in the opposite direction, so you don't have to worry about that. They also have a circular skid pad, which is polished concrete. And just imagine driving on polished concrete in a circle with water squirting on the surface. It's slippery when it comes to a car. So they're teaching you about oversteer and understeer on that particular, event. Straight skid pad. This is where, okay, now this was really cool and something I did horribly on. So you start at dead stop. You get up to 20 miles an hour, and when you cross this threshold, there's something on the road that kicks up. Now, I don't know where you're crossing, but surely you're crossing over like a rubber surface, because something kicks up and lifts either your left or your right rear wheel up. Yeah, it just bumps it up, and you immediately lose traction, and it throws you into a sideways skid. Well, the test is to be able to correct that, which, you know, if the rear end of your car slides to the right, then you're supposed to turn to the right, right? You're supposed to turn into the skid to correct for that. Well, I wasn't turning enough, and out of four attempts, I was able to right the car once. I was disappointed in myself on that. Okay. Then they have a slalom course, which I did really good. Now I learned something interesting on the slalom. And of course I'm with a professional driver, and this car actually monitors the G forces that are being exerted on your body when you're going around doing a lot of these events. As a matter of fact, when I fall or when I, you know, really jar myself, my Apple Watch will ask me, "Did you just fall?" Now, it doesn't say in an audible voice. I get a little vibration. I look down. It's asking me if I fell. And I say, no, I didn't fall. I just kind of, you know, moved quickly. Well, this happened to me like three times on this course. My watch kept asking me, did you fall? And I was just experiencing, you know, tremendous amount of G-forces. I mean, folks, this was so cool. So anyway, we pull up to this straightaway. And he asked you to come to a complete stop. And what it's showing you how this car has launch control. So basically, if you did this with a normal car, you'd blow the engine up. So he tells me to put my – now, okay, let me back up a little bit. This is a car with a manual transmission that shifts automatically. It's called PDK. And basically, it has paddle shifters. And so I put my foot on the – he told me to put my foot on the brake as hard as I could and then mash the accelerator all the way to the floor. Now, if you do that with most cars, it's just going to rev the engine up so much that it's going to probably redline and possibly blow the engine. Well, this car modulates that so it doesn't blow the engine, but it gets close. And then he says, okay, keep your foot mashed on the gas and release the brake. Well, you take off like you're shot off of an aircraft carrier in an F-14. And you're just zipping it down through there. I mean, the car accelerates it goes 0 to 60 in 2.6 seconds. So that's pretty quick. And then at the very last second, he tells you, okay, slam on the brakes. And you slam on the brakes. And you get to experience what analog brakes are like. They don't lock up. You just stop. So why would you need something like this? Well, launch control basically is if you like drag racing or you just want a thrill. It is not something that you're going to use on a daily basis. But let me go back just a second, though, to this circular skid pad. One thing I want to mention, you ever heard of dynamic stability control? Well, you probably never heard of it, but it's probably saved your life a couple times, and you don't even realize it. And I'll explain that here in just a minute. I know I've got a little bit of exuberance going on here. This was a great experience. I would not recommend a beginning driver to do this. I think you need to be experienced, preferably had some, road course, go-kart experience. I've driven a NASCAR race car around a Charlotte Motor Speedway. I got to do 3 9-lap sessions, which doesn't sound like much, but you do get the experience of a race car going around a track and you know, the responsibility that you have in controlling that car. So I wouldn't recommend you send your 16-year-old new driver down there, but I would recommend you send your new driver to a what they call driver's education on steroids. And that would be like at a Skip Barber event or a Skip Barber driving school. Best thing you could do for your new driver. I don't know. I would say the cost is probably around $1,000 to $1,500. Not 100% sure on that. But I would not send a new driver down here to drive Porsches. And so I'm not a new driver. And the experience that I had proved to me, beyond a shadow of a doubt, that I'm not near the driver that I thought I was. The other aspects of this experience were the slalom course. And interesting enough, this car can actually measure G-forces, lateral G-forces. Okay, so that's how far you're moving to the left or right, and it measures that force. Now, when you're just driving down a road, I mean, and going around curves, you might be registering maybe 0.2, 0.3 on a serious curve. I mean, we were hitting 1 to 1.5 G's on some of this, so that's pretty significant. So we drive on the left-hand side, right? Unless we're in England, we're on the right-hand side, or you're driving a car here from England. But most of the time, we drive on the left-hand side of the car. And so what he showed me is that I was actually going around, when I'm going down the slalom course, I'm going around the cones much faster when I'm turning to the left than I was when I was turning to the right. And he said, why do you think that is? And I said, well, the only thing I can explain is that I'm on the left side of the car. And he said, correct. He said, everybody does that. All amateur drivers will go around the cones faster on the left side than they will on the right side. So I said, it doesn't matter if you're left-handed or right-handed. He said, nope, it's just your position in the car and your comfort level. So I thought that was interesting. They also had a short course. Now, this is a miniature, as far as the, you know, it's not a mile and a half. It's probably maybe 2 or 3 tenths of a mile. Very compact, almost like a putt-putt compared to an 18-hole golf course. But it was polished concrete, and it demonstrates understeer and power sliding. Now, I don't know if you've ever, you know, when it snows really deep and you go out in the parking lot and misbehave a little bit sliding around. That's a great thing to do for new drivers, too, by the way, next time we have a snow, if it ever snows again, is to go out on a big open parking lot in your car and let them see what that's like. And you also come to understand what dynamic stability control is. Okay, so before I went into the break, I said, have you ever heard of that? It's probably saved your life. You remember when Ford was having a hard time with cars flipping or spinning out of control. That the Firestone tires had a propensity to burst when they got to a certain age. And, of course, Ford and Firestone had a big fight over that. But what they figured out is that these big SUVs and stuff had such a high center of gravity that they needed something to help the driver. And they've been developing this for a long time. It's called dynamic stability control. And what it does is it uses the analog brake system. If you didn't have analog brakes on your car, this wouldn't have worked. But because you have analog brakes, you have four-channel analog brakes. You have a brake line basically with fluid, one for each wheel. Now, you know, a lot of these older cars that I drive, they don't have four channels. They only have one, sometimes two channels. So you have one brake line that goes to the rear wheels and splits, and then you have one that goes to the front. Well, your car has four-channel ABS brakes. So if you know, one of your wheels locks up, if you're going doing a panic stop and one of your wheels locks up, then your car is going to compensate automatically, let off the pressure on that particular wheel until it regains traction, and then it'll apply the brakes again. It does that without you even knowing it. Now, you can feel some brake pedal pulsation. Have you ever hit your brakes and come to a panic stop and you feel this pulsation on your foot? Well, that's the ABS system working. That's what it's supposed to do. I used to have customers complain about that the early days of ABS. But, you know, most people never have an opportunity to slam on their brakes. I hope you don't. But it is something that you should practice. And the best place to do that is in a slippery parking lot. Watch out for the light poles, though. So anyway, the dynamic stability control uses that ABS system to control your vehicle, and it has another sensor on there called a yaw control that it senses, okay, this car, Lenny's got his steering wheel straight, but this car is starting to go sideways. So it's sensing that directional conflict, and it knows that, well, Lenny's steering wheel is straight, so he's wanting to go straight, but we're kind of, the rear end's going to the right, so we need to correct that. So the computer works with the braking system and the ABS to fix that for you. A good example, you know what it feels like to actually be going around a curve and your right front tire goes off the road a little bit. You know, there's a little bump there, and then you have gravel and stuff, and then your rear end follows it, and you try to correct that by going back onto the road. Well, the first thing you're supposed to do is just slow down and don't fight it. Don't jerk the steering wheel back towards the road, or you will spin around. But this stability control keeps the car from spinning around. Now, it won't correct an extreme case of that, but most minor cases of stability or loss of stability, it will fix it for you, and you don't even realize it. Well, he showed us how this works on this skid pad. So we were going around in a circle pretty fast, and he told me to floor it, and I did. The car started to go sideways, but it corrected itself. And then we stopped. He turned off the stability control, which you can do on your car as well. He turned that off, and then we went around in a circle. And he said, floor it. I floored it, and we spun completely around. So if I'd have been a professional driver, I might have been able to correct that situation. But since I am not, then we spun around. The beauty of this to me is just thinking about how many advancements have come to everyday cars as a result of what happens on a racetrack. I think of all the technologies from analog brakes to dynamic stability control to the way our tires and wheels are designed, suspensions are designed, seat belts. Even the safety of our highways have been improved because of what they have learned on racetracks. But one of the things that science cannot improve, and that's how people drive. All that science can do is mitigate the mistakes that we humans make, and we make a bunch of them. As I was driving back from rehab this morning, I had several people just not paying attention, you know, drifting over on my side of the road, you know, on their cell phones or just distracted. I just really don't want to drive on a two-lane road anymore. I just don't trust what's coming my way. I certainly have stopped riding my bicycle on any kind of high traffic road. I mean, I'm probably crazy to ride it at all on any kind of road because of how distracted people are. We can't fix that. The only thing that fixes that, I guess, is people learning from a mistake, and hopefully it won't be a hard mistake, one that has catastrophic results. So I'll tell you the last thing that I learned. When we were pretty much done, and I was pulling in for my last trip around the track, I had three consecutive runs around the track, and I was tired. Three laps wore me out, just the level of concentration, and I'm tense, you know, because I don't want to make a mistake and so forth. Well, the professional driver says, well, now it's my turn. I said, oh, good. So you're going to drive. Yes, we're going to do two laps with me. Folks, you know, this is where I had a major paradigm shift, meaning I viewed professional drivers in a much different light. I thought I was a pretty good driver until he drove. And I wasn't scared. I wasn't frightened at all, but I did get nauseated. And it was simply, I really don't do well with rides at the fair and stuff like that anyway, but he was going so much faster than I was. You know, on a scale of 0 to 10, if I was at, if he was at like 7, I was probably at 3 compared to what this guy would do. And he said, Lenny, as a matter of fact, I'm driving about 70% of the capability of this car. But folks, it was just ridiculous. If you have any opportunity, if you've been a car lover and you want to experience, and maybe you love sports cars and stuff, it doesn't matter if it's Corvettes or Mustangs or Camaros or, you know, some other sports car. If you're a Porsche guy, it's all the better, or gal. You know, go to the Porsche Experience website in Atlanta. It is really close. Took me 4 hours to get there. And got to go to Bucky's. Yeah, had to stop. There's one in, like, I don't know, Calhoun, Georgia. It was somewhere, I don't know, we were about 60 miles north of Atlanta. And my wife got to experience Bucky's. She said, boy, they have nice bathrooms. That's true. But I would highly recommend that you give this a shot. It's not cheap. It actually costs about $1,000. And then you need to buy the insurance because if you wreck the car, then you are liable for up to $10,000 unless you buy the insurance, and then you're not liable for anything. So I bought the little extra insurance. I think it was $99 or something like that. But these are very expensive cars, and I tell you, you don't want to go off the road. You do not want to knock over cones. You don't want to do anything dumb because they will pull you out of that car so fast it'll make your head swim. Okay, I'm going to take my last break, and I'll be back here in just a second. Well, I was excited about coming back and explaining what this was like, what I went through, but you know, there's just no way to actually convey that with just words. You pretty much have to do it and see it. I'm sure you can go online and check out some videos of what they actually do down there. But, you know, I guess my biggest takeaway from this was if you're going to mess around with a car and you're going to go fast, you need to do it on a racetrack and not on a city street. And you see a lot of behaviors out there that people really think they're really good drivers. And they are, as long as something doesn't go wrong. Like a blowout at 50 miles an hour, like accidentally going off the side of the road or the berm, or a panic stop, a loss of control under any circumstances, driving on slick roads, even rain slick roads. These are all things that we take for granted. We think that we're safe, we're good, when in fact we're not as good as we think we are. So, great experience. I highly recommend it. I may discuss this further in later shows, but I appreciate you listening, and we will talk to you tomorrow.